I'm Marty Moscowane. Welcome to Radio Times.
This call is from the Department of Social Security Administration. The reason you have received this phone call from our department is to inform you that we just suspend your Social Security number because we found some suspicious activity. So if you want to know about this case, just press 1. Thank you.
That is a robocall that Radio Times producer Debbie Bilder got on her cell phone recently. And apparently scammers often use phony alerts about Social Security to scare unsuspecting consumers into giving up their personal and financial information. There has been a surge in robocalls in recent years. You've probably noticed it. By one estimate, 26 billion robocalls made to Americans' phones in 2018. While these calls are annoying, they can also be threatening and can falsely promise you that you've won a big pot of money, and it doesn't seem to matter if you are in the Do Not Call registry. So today on Radio Times, why this surge in robocalls and what you can do to make sure you do not get scammed. Joining us is Raymond Huahong Tu, and he's a computer science professor at the University of Maryland. And Raymond, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Also with us is Doug Shadell. He's state director for the AARP in Washington State, an expert on how to detect and prevent financial exploitation, wrote a couple of books, including Weapons of Fraud and Outsmarting the Scam Artists. And Doug Shadell, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks.
You're very welcome. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Doug, the last time you were on the show, we were talking about people at the other end of the phone who were threatening, often elderly people, but threatening them with, you know, all sorts of nefarious things. And now we're talking about robots at the other end of the line. What has happened?
Yeah, well, technology has just made it easier. And, you know, the fraud game has always been a numbers game. Only a certain percentage of people will fall for these types of pitches to win prizes and so forth. So the more numbers you can start with, the greater your chances of success. And with the robot technology now, where you can press a button and for pennies you can call 100,000 people, you're able to canvas the landscapes, you know, throughout a broader net. And so I think that's partly what's going on here. And the thing that worries me is you see a lot more fear-based appeals. The spoofing is one thing, and it's really easier and easier because of technology to spoof numbers and pretend to be the IRS or Social Security, as you just heard. But we know from the social science literature that fear appeals are more effective. You're much more likely to do something to avoid losing something, whether it's your freedom or your money, than you are to gain something. So we see this proliferation not only of the number of calls people are getting, but of these scare tactics that people respond to.
Raymond, let me turn to you and just say also to our listeners that spoofing is using local area codes, so the people picking up the phone or looking at their screen might think it's a local neighbor or some local company that's giving them a call. But from a technological perspective, Raymond, why are we seeing so many more robocalls?
From a technological perspective, there are two things. One is the technology to disseminate and the cost to disseminate. So the number one, the cost to disseminate phone calls has dramatically decreased because the phone calls nowadays are carried over the internet, and which made the cost per call down to less than a cent. So for the spammer, they could make a large number of calls without costing too much. Another thing is the technology to carry these calls has been easier. There are auto call services and their own software to deploy to connect to these services that allows them to put in a pre-recorded message and send out to a list of phone numbers, which they could collect from the internet or just go through the phone book or just randomly dial numbers until they catch a fish or two.
Raymond, let me go back to you and Doug as well. As you both have said, it's very cheap for these robocalls to be sent to phones all over the country, or probably all over the world. But where is the money? Does the money happen when someone picks up? You want to take that, Raymond?
The money, no. So it costs them a little bit of money to send out all these phone calls, but they're casting a pretty big net, a wide net. to catch a big fish or two. So sometimes for most of us, we find it annoying and we don't really fall for these scams, but they're looking for this one or two big fish that could net them thousands or millions of dollars. And that would be enough to fund the thousands and thousands of phone calls they send out.
You said big fish. What's a big fish?
So a big fish, maybe they could run a scam like the IRS scam or phone numbers spoofing scam. For example, they can spoof your family number, and so it appears as if they could as if that it's calling from, let's say, a friend or a known phone number that they trust, and they can use this trust to create a pretty compelling case, for example, kidnapping or basically urgent matters, and basically to scam people out of thousands of dollars or even millions. So there are some high profile cases where they target businesses and they use excuses such as trade or business and to basically scam down millions of dollars. So that millions of dollars is more than enough for them to send out thousands and thousands of phone calls.
Doug, let me go back to you. Is the message then don't ever pick up your phone?
Well, I mean, I think...
Hold on, Ray. Raymond, let me give Doug a chance to respond to that, and then we'll get you back in on the conversation. Doug, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's... I've said that for years. You know, I've been doing this for a long time, and ever since they passed the Telephone Consumer Protection Act in 1991, I've been saying, don't answer your phone with, you know, a solicitor. Unfortunately, now you're just getting bombarded. I just want to mention one thing about that's you started with the clip about the Social Security thing. That's the biggest scam in America right now. Calling saying somebody has compromised your Social Security card. We found your card in a car in the border of Texas with blood and cocaine in it.
Wow.
And if you don't immediately respond, you're going to jail. I took one of these calls about a month ago and followed it through all the way to the end. And as your other guest was saying, one of the ways you get to the end, it's kind of like a video game where you want to get to the monster at the end. So I told them that I had $89,000 in my checking account, and I pretended to be a very old, frail person. And the thing that was shocking to me is I have always thought a lot of these calls are trying to get your personal information so they can steal your identity. He asked for my Social Security number, for my birth date, and I gave him a bunch of fake information. And then he said, oh, I see your file right here. Well, it was all fake. How could you see my file? But anyway, that is not what he was going for, though. He wanted to get every dime of the money in my checking account. And the way he basically did this is to say, a scammer has gotten a hold of your Social Security account. He's created 25 new accounts. So I need to know which are yours. Tell me how much money you have in your checking account right now. So I told him I have $89,000 in my checking account. Then he gives me to a closer who says, you need to take that money out right now and convert it to cash and convert it to a government certified prepaid bond. Well, what is that? You know, an iTunes card, right? And so this is how they convert the money. What shocked me about it, I guess, is it wasn't enough to just get personal information or maybe $100 here. He was going to take every dime of my money in my checking account. So when you're talking about, you know, a big fish, I pretended to be a big fish. You get the closer, and they will not stop until they get every last dime.
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions, Doug. I mean, how many, I guess, button pushes did it take to get to an actual human being?
For me, you mean?
Yeah.
The call comes in. It's a recording. Call this number back. I call the number back, and they say, hello, Social Security Administration, can I help you? And it was that quick. Now I'm talking to a real human being, you know, and eventually he spoofed the Social Security number. He told me to look up the number, the Social Security Administration number online. I'm like, well, why would I do that? You're calling me. And he goes, because I want to make sure that when they call you back and you see that number on your caller ID, you'll know that it's real. And sure enough, I looked it up, gave him the 800 number, and 2 minutes later, somebody called, and my phone said the number for the Social Security Administration.
Wow.
So they had spoofed the number. This is the thing we're trying to get at. We're going to do a campaign later this year in AARP to just remind people how easy it is to spoof a number. You can download an app and it's widely available. And it's simply, you know, you call a number, and I've done this. I've had people demonstrate this. Here's how hard it is to spoof a number. You call in, and they say, enter the number you want to dial. So you enter the number you want to dial. Then it says, now enter the number you want it to look like you're calling from.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's that simple. And then that number, whatever number that is, it could be the Federal Trade Commission, it could be the Social Security Administration, it could be the IRS, it could be my own number. You know, you can do any number you want. And so people just aren't aware of how this technology, how easy it is to spoof numbers.
Raymond, let me get back to you and actually read a comment from Patrick, who left it on our Facebook page. He said, some days are quiet, only one or two scam calls like this. Other days I've topped out at 15 calls from scammers, all with fake numbers. And then he adds, I'm on the Do Not Call Registry, too. So does the Do Not Call Registry, and I think there are several hundred million people in the registry, does that not matter anymore?
Yes, it has lost its effectiveness, mainly because the caller. So the way Do Not Call Registry is set up is to deter people in the United States or businesses in the United States to honor the Do Not Call list. However, it's for these scammers, they are running an illegal operation, and they come from foreign countries, many of them. So they don't really respect the Do Not Call Registry, and it's really difficult to enforce especially when it's the caller ID has been spoofed, because it's really difficult for the victims to report on where the actual scams come from.
So do most of them originate from overseas or domestic, or is it a mix of the two?
It's hard to say, but I would say that the Do Not Call Registry would work better for the telemarketers located within the United States, because it's easier to track them down and give them a hefty fine if they are found to go against the law. But it's not really effective for a lot of scams that come from overseas, just as what Doug just mentioned, like IRS scams, and they mostly come from foreign countries.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We're talking about robocalls. You've probably been getting them, and you can join our conversation. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Any questions or comments? And again, talking with Raymond Hua Hong Tu, and he's a computer science professor at the University of Maryland, Doug Shadell, state director for the AARP in Washington State. He's written a couple of books called Weapons of Fraud, Outsmarting the Scam Artists. He's an expert on how to detect and prevent financial exploitation. Much more after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Shirley from Microsoft. We have been trying to get in touch with you. However, we will be disconnecting your Windows license within 48 hours, as your IP address has been compromised from several countries. So, we need to change your IP address and your license key, so please press 1 to get connected to technician.
That is a scam robocall, and we are talking about robocalls in this hour of Radio Times with our guest Doug Shadell and Raymond Hua Hong Tu, and with you. Doug, let me go back to you. Are we talking about, I mean, obviously if someone is if it's fraud or threatening phone calls, that is against the law. Is there anything legal about robocalls?
Well, you know, we were talking about the Do Not Call list earlier, and I agree with Raymond that it's largely being ignored by most of the, most of the people out there globally who are calling. Most of them are illegal unless you have a prior business relationship. Your bank credit card actually calling you. The problem is that a lot of times it's your bank credit card company spoofing calling you. It's not really them. It's Donna from Credit Card Services who wants to lower your interest rate. And by the way, that audio tape that you just played about the tech support,
yep,
when we go into rooms with our folks, the seniors, and I can say this now because I'm a senior, but that is the most prevalent one. That's the one that people get a lot. They remember it, and they're most frightened by it because they're basically saying there's something wrong with your computer. What happens if you respond to that? You respond to that, and what they're going to do is they're going to ask you to take over. Let me into your computer. Let me screen share with your computer. I can't tell you how many times we've described that, played that tape, and people have come up to me afterwards and said, I didn't want to admit this in the room, but I actually did that. What should I do? You know, I paid them three. Because what they'll do is they'll screen share, they'll get into your computer, they'll find something wrong with your computer, whether there is something or not, and either charge you for it or install malware so that pop-up screens will say that there's a virus and you're just, it's a mess. So that's just one to really beware of. And again, it plays on this fear response that people have, especially our older folks who are not as familiar with computers and are intimidated by the fact that something might be wrong with their computer.
Let me read, and I'll put this to you, Raymond. This is from Anne. She said, I've heard of scam calls that try to get you to keep talking so they can record your voice. Do you know anything about that? Is that a scam that you've heard of, Raymond?
I personally haven't heard of it, but I think it makes sense for certain situations. For example, there are some financial institutions that use voice to help identify the client. So maybe they're trying to collect a profile of the victim so that they could use it to log into their bank accounts. That could be a scenario I can envision.
I'm wondering, too, I mean, we're certainly told don't give out your Social Security number. And I'm wondering, Raymond, whether that should also apply to our phone numbers.
Yeah, I totally agree with that statement. You should keep your phone number private unless it's absolutely necessary. And because if you give out your phone numbers, it could get into the hands of these scammers and they could just use that to scam.
You agree with that, Doug?
I do. One thing, I'll give you my little spiel about personal information.
Go ahead.
Don't give out personal information, but all of your personal information is already out there. We live in a post-prevention world when it comes to identity theft crimes. All of your information is out there. A lot of it is being bought and sold on the dark web. Last year, we interviewed a guy who it took us on a tour of the dark web, and he showed me a website where for $2.99, you can buy almost anyone's Social Security number. And I didn't believe him, so I had him look up my wife's number, and sure enough, he found it. Huh. And the point to that is not to scare people. It's to say that if so, then what? When it comes to protecting yourself from identity theft, these calls, you really need to take some prevention steps. The biggest thing is monitoring your accounts online. We also really strongly recommend that people freeze their credit. The credit bureaus, you know, will offer to sell you monitoring services, and they'll sell you lock services, and they'll sell you all these things. But there's a new federal law that allows you to freeze your credit at no charge. And what that does is if somebody does get a hold of your information and tries to steal your identity, they can't open new accounts in your name because your credit is frozen. You can thaw your credit if you want to go and get a new bank card and then you can thaw it and then refreeze it and so forth. So that's my little spiel about that. Yes, if somebody asks you for personal information, don't give it out willy-nilly because that would not be helpful. But a lot of it's out there already.
I wonder to you, Raymond, if people change their phone number or keep changing their phone number. And I know there's some apps that you can use to prevent or at least stop some of these spam phone calls. Can you speak to that?
So the problem with the phone number is that it only has 9 or 10 digits in the United States. A lot of the phone numbers have been refarmed. Basically, what it means is it has been previously owned by a different owner. And when you try to change your phone number, you are just inheriting the phone number that's already been used. There's not a lot of new or fresh or basically unused telephone numbers out there. So I don't think that's a really strong strategy to prevent robocalls. But what I think the best strategy to prevent robocalls is just to be vigilant. Don't fall victim to them. Once you fall victim to one or two scams, you could get onto a list where they would collect a list of profiles where what kind of people, what kind of phone numbers previously fell for a scam, and they will basically target you furthermore.
Is that an argument for making our giving more numbers to our phone numbers just to add to the possibility that they can't be duplicated?
I don't think that's the problem. The problem is when you change your phone number. So if you're asking me about, okay, what if we have too many phone numbers, then that's not really a valid strategy, because I think that nowadays a lot of services rely on you having a somewhat static phone number. So if you keep changing your phone number, that means you have to change your phone number profiles everywhere, like your bank, your apps. That could be a lot of problems. And also for the contacts that you have, that they will have to be informed that you change your phone numbers.
Sure, it's kind of a pain in the neck to keep doing that. Doug, let me go back to you, and you have referenced the fact that it seems like older people are at more risk for some of these scams for probably some very obvious reasons. Their lack of computer savvy compared to younger people. I'm assuming older people are more alone. They might be lonely. And I also wonder whether a female voice or a male voice, which is more welcoming when it comes to these robocalls?
Yeah, those are all good questions. Well, one myth I did just say when it comes to tech support scams, I think older people are more vulnerable because of their lack of awareness of technology. But it's not true to say that as a blanket statement, and you're not the only one, I mean, a lot of people think this, that seniors are vulnerable to all scams more than other people. Younger people are vulnerable to a lot of different scams as well. We've found in previous research. But there is, I saw a study and actually interviewed this guy named Chris Hadnagy, who works for Social Engineer Inc. Companies hire him. It's like that movie Sneakers. Companies hire him to break into their company to show their vulnerabilities, right? And one of the main ways that phishing happens, or it's called vishing, voice phishing, is a bad guy will call a business posing as the HR department and try and convince the person to give personal information about their relationship with the company so they can infiltrate the company. So he calls 20,000 people over the last 3 years. These are clients, employees in these companies. But one of the things he found was he did it with men, employees of his, pretending to do this, and women. And the women were much better. He says women are better attackers than men.
Wow.
There's hard data that shows that they're much better at getting people to turn over personal information than men. Now, I don't know what we don't know the reason for that. Maybe they don't suspect women as much doing that kind of thing. The other thing he found in this study, which I found fascinating and it makes intuitive sense, is that there are times of day when people are more vulnerable to these types of calls. And by extension, theoretically, all telemarketing types of calls, right? Afternoons they're more vulnerable in the afternoon than they are in the morning. They're really vulnerable on Fridays compared to Mondays for obvious reasons.
By the end of the week, we're exhausted, right?
Do not answer your phone on Friday afternoon.
Got it.
So
there you go. Let me get Bob from Princeton to join us in Radio Times. Hi, Bob. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Sure.
It's really funny. As I was waiting to get on the air, I got a phishing scam on an email saying that my computer had been hacked.
Oh, my goodness.
Just two seconds ago.
Well, you called the right place, Bob. Yep.
I did. But the reason for my call was, and this is something I've always wondered, why can't the Senate or the government pass some kind of laws that make spoofing illegal? The fact that you can use a fictitious phone number, why isn't it illegal?
Right. Such a basic and good question. Raymond, can you take that?
Yes. Actually, there is already a law to make sure that the caller ID has to be authentic. The main problem is the enforcement and the infrastructure. So the telephone infrastructure was designed in the 1990s. And back then, there was no understanding of these kind of problems that could arise. So the caller ID was designed to let the caller declare, or the calling operator to declare what caller ID the call comes from. But right now, because we have this rise of caller ID scams, the industry is trying to catch up on the technology to enforce the caller ID authentication for the callers.
Well, it seems you got both the industry and also the government, Doug. Do you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I was just going to say I couldn't agree more. There is a law called the Truth in Caller ID Act, and it makes it illegal to pretend to be somebody you're not if you're intending to defraud them. And Raymond's exactly right. The problem is you talk to law enforcement about how to enforce these laws, and it's just like playing whack-a-mole. The FTC will find, you know, one of these robo-dialers who does spoofing $120 million, but then another one crops up right after that. And so, you know, we spend a lot of time trying to give people tips about how can, you know, what about call blocking services? One of the things we recommend to people is call your phone company and see if they offer a call blocking service. There are also other blocking services that you can pay for, like NomoRobo or Umail. There's a variety of them. I'm most familiar with NomoRobo, just because we partnered with them to try and get some of this information out, some of the tapes you heard, that's where I got them from. And, you know, Raymond was saying earlier, I thought that was an interesting comment he made about how just changing your phone number may not work because you'll still get telemarketers. That's actually how some of these call blocking services work. They'll buy giant numbers of old phone numbers, let them ring into their computer, and that's how they identify a robo-dialer. If it's the call of origin is going out to thousands of destinations in their honeypot, that's what they call it, as a honeypot, then they identify the robo number that way. They put it into a blacklist pool. And when you have this service, when one of those people calls your number, they compare it to the blacklist. And if there's a match, it blocks it. And if there's no match, it lets it through. And they block 98% of the calls that way. And so there are these services out there, but it's whack-a-mole for law enforcement, and it's also whack-a-mole even for the call blocking. Because some of these, you know, the NomoRobo people say they identify 1,000 new robo-dialers a day. I mean, it is just a massive problem.
And that is Doug Shadell, who joins us along with Raymond Huahong Tu, and we are talking about robocalls. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Doug, my jaw dropped when you gave out that number. I mean, this is just a relentless and overwhelming problem. And talk about whack-a-mole. It just seems that the scammers are just ahead of the companies, the phone companies, or members of our government.
Yeah. I mean, I think they, you know, people would, in an honest moment, even the government people will acknowledge that. And so this has always been true with fraud. I've been doing this a long time. And it's never been I used to be a fraud investigator, and I gave up because I couldn't catch them, you know.
Wow.
It's like, why don't we get to the people before they get to them and give them some tools to be able to see, you know, my phrase is, if you can see a malicious attempt coming from a distance, you're better able to defend against it. And so this is why we spend so much time getting these tapes, pushing them out there, trying to tell people, if somebody says they're from the IRS and you owe them money, do not respond. If you're worried about the IRS, you can independently call them to see if there is a problem. And the IRS there's a million of them. I mean, there's the jury duty scam, which is somebody calls you up and says you missed jury duty. You have to pay a $989 fee. There's a story coming out in the AARP magazine later this summer about that scam being operated out of a prison in Georgia, where hundreds of inmates smuggling cell phones into the prison were calling from their jail cells, pretending to be from the local police department. Because once you have a cell phone, then you have access to the internet. So
that is incredible. I don't even know what to say about that. That is just shocking and incredible. Raymond, let me read an email from Elizabeth who says, should I just ignore the call when I recognize it as a robocall or a scam, or should I answer it and remain totally silent? What is the best way to deal with these calls? We touched on this earlier, but I want to make sure that our listeners know what to do. What's your suggestion, Raymond?
My suggestion is that if it's an unknown number, try not to, if it's not really urgent, try not to answer it and wait for it to go into voicemail. And sometimes you can just listen to the voicemail and determine whether it's a trustable source. If that's not possible, what you do, just stay vigilant. We've done some experiments and we found that vigilance is the best defense against robocalls and scams. I think just staying vigilant is the best approach.
And I hear that from both of you. What's your definition, Raymond, of vigilant? Just sort of knowing what to look for and knowing what to do depending on what you know.
So staying vigilant. So number one, don't always trust the caller ID that you see, even if it looks like from a local phone number or 800 number. Or even sometimes could be, in rare cases, a known contact that you already saved. Don't 100% trust it. Still have some doubt about whether this could be the actual person. Secondly, ask questions. When mm-hmm. you receive it, let's say you answer the phone calls, you ask questions. Ask questions. Where are you coming from? How do you get my information? Try to probe. That way you can get more information about the caller. If it's he or she is a scammer, then there's no way he can answer every question that you ask. So, and third is just don't answer everything. If it's a known number, you could answer it. Just ask some questions. If it's an unknown number, just let it ring or go into voicemail.
Fair enough. Let's take another short break and we'll get back to our conversation. That's Raymond Huahong Tu, and he's a computer science professor at the University of Maryland. Doug Shadell with us as well. State director for the AARP in Washington State. He's written a couple of books called Weapons of Fraud, Outsmarting the Scam Artists. And we are talking about robocalls and what to do about them. Much more after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, good day. My name is Betty Simmons with the U.S. Claims and Delivery Service. I am calling to notify you that you're a lucky winner of a cash award.
Hi, this is Donna with Card Services, calling in regards to your credit card accounts. It appears that you are now eligible for interest rates as low as 6.9%. However, this offer is about to expire.
Those are more examples of fake robocalls, and that's what we're talking about today on Radio Times. Again, with Doug Shadell and with Raymond Huahong Tu, and with you, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Doug, let me go back to you, because my understanding especially with a do not call registry, even if no one abides by it, that politicians or elected officials are allowed to call you unsolicited, as are charities and nonprofits. Is that correct?
Yeah, there is an exemption in the law for certain categories of call where they're essentially non-commercial types of calls. And so that's true.
Right.
And there, you know, there is some legitimate other purposes for robo-dialing. It's not all just evil. Notification in emergencies of where to go in a case of an emergency, when there are missing children and so forth, I get those kind of robocalls. There are legitimate uses for it. We use it, AARP uses it to do teletown halls with elected officials. I've done many of them. It's ironic because here we are talking about robodials.
Exactly.
You may hear my voice on a robodial someday. Hi, this is Doug Shadell. Stay on the line, and we've got the governor.
How will I know it's you?
Well, it may not be. How do you know it's me now?
Don't even go there. Don't even go there.
I know. That's the problem. You know, that is part of the problem.
It is part of the problem.
You just start to, is anything real? You know, that's what I worry about, is that we start to just mistrust each other. And I think the antidote to that, you were talking about how to remain vigilant. We have been trying to go across the country training our people to become fraud fighters. We take them through this content we've been discussing today. At the end, we give them a fraud fighter pin and say, you're now a fraud fighter. Please go out and warn five other people. And this is not just sort of a do good, feel good thing. We have research that shows that when you get somebody to self-identify as a fraud fighter, that is a self-inoculating behavior. They're less like, we actually did a study about 10 years ago where we trained people to be fraud fighters and another group we didn't train. And then we had a con man call both groups. And the group that had been trained to be fraud fighters was 50% less responsive to the pitch than the group that had not been trained as fraud fighters. And we think it's because it changes the way you perceive the incoming message. If you perceive the incoming message to be an opportunity or a real threat and you don't think any more deeply about it than that, you're vulnerable. If you're looking at all of those messages to at least in the first instance say, is it real or is it not real? I'm going to start with that evaluation. You're more likely to discard it and not be victimized.
Let me get Karen from Wilmington, Delaware, to join our conversation. And Karen, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Good morning. Oh, morning. My God. I don't know where to start now.
I get it. I get it, Karen.
But I mean, I've just recently had my very first fishing expedition online. And I would say that, you know, I'm totally covered on the phone end because I just don't pick it up ever. But, yeah, they fished me, and I had to go, you know, get it wiped off of the computer. And being completely tech-averse as it is, at 65 years of age and never having fallen in love with it, I just, you know, I haven't been on the laptop since then. So, you know, that's how paranoid it made me. Yeah. And I got to tell you, Marty, that lead-in you did with those voices was so freaky. You know?
Well, part of, and this comes in part from Doug Shadell, and as a way of just alerting, I think, all of us to the potential scam artists out there. Karen, I appreciate your call to Radio Times. Raymond, anything you want to add to that? She talked about this fishing expedition on her laptop, but just how scary it was.
Again, my advice is to stay vigilant and ask questions. When you ask a lot of questions, you will get a sense whether this person is a scammer or not.
To ask questions and to be vigilant and to educate yourself. Here's an email from Sharon. My parents reached out to me saying they received a call from Homeland Security asking them to return the call. I told them ignore it because it's a fake. Several days later, my dad called saying, you'll never guess who showed up at our house, Homeland Security. Turns out they were actually doing a sweep of farms who purchased fertilizers to confirm their legitimacy. And as you were saying earlier, Doug, you know, the trick is sort of knowing what's real and what isn't real these days.
Yeah, and I think so that's a very interesting example. And the danger of us just wholesale discarding everything and just don't respond to anyone. If you get a call from whether it's Homeland Security or whomever, and you're not sure, and you probably shouldn't be sure, don't call the number they leave, and don't call the number that appears on your caller ID, because we know now that that can be spoofed. Look them up independently online and call independently and say, I got a call like this. Is it real? Are you really doing that? That is a simple step everyone can take. So because, you know, if you call back, if I, in the case of the Social Security thing that I was describing, if a victim got that like that, and they had actually called, notice he didn't tell me to call that 800 number that I looked up that was the real Social Security number. He said they will call you because they can spoof me on the number. But if I called that number, because I did, it's the real Social Security Administration, and they would say, oh, my God, don't have anything to do with it. So in here, your example you just gave there, if you had independently looked up the number for Homeland Security and called, this person had, they would have, you know, been told it was a real thing, and then they can go forward.
Yeah, so sort of be proactive that way. Let me get Patricia from Bryn Mawr to join our conversation. And Patricia, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just a quick little vignette. I was deep in a work project at home yesterday, and the phone went off, and I happened to look at the caller ID, and it said it was my husband, albeit using a nickname he never uses, calling from the very phone I was just looking at, which, needless to say, was not in use.
What do you make of that, Raymond?
So it's most likely a case of caller ID spoofing. In this case, more like a spear phishing attempt. They're trying to spoof a known identity that you trust. So this makes the victim more likely to fall for a scam. So again, when you call back this phone number, you have to ask questions. What's going on? Make sure that you don't always trust the caller ID that you receive.
Plus, Patricia said that while the number looked familiar, the name was not. And I would assume, Raymond, that would be a telltale sign.
That could be a telltale sign, yes.
Patricia, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me read an email from Emily, who says, my mom is constantly answering every call that comes through her cell phone. I'm convinced every time she does that, she's getting added to yet another scammer's list. Raymond, if I can go back to you, is that how it works?
That might be how it works. We don't exactly know how these scammers operate, but there seems to be a correlation between the people that used to fall for a scam or answer the scam. They're more likely to get a future robocall. But it's really hard to say. And even if you never answer a call, you'll still receive robocalls. So I wouldn't say it would be a strong strategy, but it does. It may help in certain situations.
Clark says, I just start wasting the robocaller's time, and that seemed to work. After a week of doing this, I had no more calls. And I wonder, Doug, if you could speak to that. I was also reading about people that, you know, get revenge on robocallers or even, you know, blast loud noises in response. Does any of that stuff work?
I don't know if it works to reduce the number of calls. One thing that will work to increase the number of calls, though, is if you fall for it, if you actually go for it. I can't tell you how many con men I have interviewed over the years. They buy these lists of victims, especially in the investment fraud world. Mm-hmm. And I could never understand why you would want to call somebody who just lost $100,000 to an oil and gas scam. And it's because they're a phone buyer. They're people who buy over the phone. And the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior, even if you just lost $100,000. The other big piece of what makes people victimized is the use of emotion. It's a very emotional thing to lose $100,000. And the con men will try and get you into this, what we call under the ether. And when I first heard this, I'm like, what does that mean? Under the ether means in a heightened state of emotion, either positive emotion or negative. Doesn't seem to matter. And we did a study with Stanford about 5 years ago where we brought people into a room, got them into a heightened state positively and or negatively, and then a neutral state, and had them look at deceptive ads. And the people in the high emotion and low emotion states were much more likely to fall for those ads. So not making a decision. Another tip, if you're looking for tips, is don't make decisions while you're in a heightened emotional state. Don't answer a robo-dial because there's also a correlation between victimization and negative life events. So if you just had a spouse die or if you just lost your job, that is another vulnerability point.
Being excited or vulnerable or feeling some degree of, I guess, what weakness, do you think, Doug?
Well, I think we don't exactly know what the mechanism is, but my speculation is that it takes a lot of cognitive capacity to cope with a negative life event, capacity that you might otherwise use to defend against these attacks. And so I think that what may contribute to why it makes you vulnerable.
Raymond, we have an email from Pam. She says, oddly, we have received spam phone calls on the caller ID. It says spam in big letters. Should we be surprised by that?
Again, this is just another case of caller ID spoofing, big letters and small letters. It depends on what you save your contact as. And the other possibility is that there's on landlines, there are a caller name identification service where the operator have already pre-built a long list of phone numbers to names. And maybe in that entry, there is a name that's written in big letters.
I
didn't know that. That's interesting.
That is very interesting. Let me play, and this is a Chinese language robo call voice message actually recorded on Radio Times producer John Aaron's phone, just so we can hear something that's not in English. So, Raymond, I mean, that's obviously in a language that most people in this country are not going to understand. How common is that, and how effective is that?
That's to target the people that understand Chinese. I guess the scammers in this case are looking for the Chinese demographics. The basic the content of the robocall is that you have a package that's waiting to be collected. Please contact us to find out more information about your package. So it sounds like a pretty convincing scenario mm-hmm. to get people to call back.
And I'm assuming that was just one example, but there are lots of robocalls in various different languages. Is that true, Raymond?
I would say, yeah, as long as it is cheap enough for the scammers to send out these phone calls, as long as it's profitable, it's just, in the end, it's about economics. If it's a profitable operation, then it will likely... you'll likely receive it in that language. In some countries, they have extremely high cost of making phone calls. That's why they don't get a lot of robocalls. In the U.S., we get a lot of robocalls. One of the reasons, because it just costs so little.
Because it's so cheap.
To send out all these phone calls.
And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Doug, Rick emails, one of your guests advised not to give out your phone number when you purchase something online. The form you fill out always requires you to enter a phone number, yet I've never been called about my purchase. Should I enter a fake phone number? What do you think?
Well, I mean, increasingly, I'm sort of skeptical about entering phone numbers, and there are ways that you can get, you know, a Skype number or, you know, a Google number that is just a random number that doesn't tie back to you, or if it does tie back to you, you'll know that it was because you filled out the form online. So what I guess I'm saying is you could spoof it and right. put your own number. Spoof the spoofer, if you will. But it's really up to, you know, and another piece of advice that I like to give people is just on the question of buying things on the internet.
Right.
Is you have to have a credit card, and I would not use a debit card because debit card's tied to your checking account. Use a credit card, and use a credit card where that's the only thing you use that credit card for, so that if it gets out, it's floating around the internet, it's not tied, you'll understand where the breach might have happened.
Let me squeeze in one more email. This is from Rhonda. Raymond, I'll put this to you. She says, how can I stop my phone number from being used as the number that is making the call? I get very angry calls from people who are getting calls from her. And she says, I'm not a robocaller, but seems like someone has hijacked her phone number.
Yeah, this is an unfortunate situation of caller ID spoofing. The caller ID, the caller could spoof to any phone number. And in this case, she's a victim of basically originating a scam. So in the industry, and what I've been working on is to basically introduce this caller ID authentication technology, which in the future, hopefully in the near future, so that if these telephone companies roll this technology out, what will happen is that her phone number will not be able to be used as the origination of a scam. But it all depends on the telephone companies enforcing it.
Well, I do appreciate both of you joining us today in Radio Times. Raymond Huahong Tu, thank you for joining us.
Thank you all.
And he's a computer science professor at the University of Maryland. Doug Shadell, thanks for coming back on the show.
It's my pleasure, as always.
And he's state director for the AARP in Washington State, author of a couple of books, including Weapons of Fraud and Outsmarting the Scam Artists. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about the program. And, Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.